Welcome to the Welsby Shift podcast, business and life coaching that works. We are Amanda Welsby and Emma Welsby, two sisters with one goal, to share tools that may help make navigating life easier. Who you are filters into everything you are and do, whether it be your work life or family life. We help to surface strategies that may assist you in finding ways that improve outcomes and make life and work feel a whole lot more manageable. In each podcast, we will discuss common life topics with insights that may help to make your life an easier place to be. Welcome to the Welsby Shift podcast.
Hi, Amanda.
Good morning.
Hello. So the last time we met, we talked about the Enneagram, and it was a bit of a sort of overview introduction. And today we thought it would be good to talk about the essentials that people need to know about the Enneagram. I was going to say Instagram then, about the Enneagram.
There's a lot we could say about Instagram, I think, however.
Could you kind of just like give us an overview where people can really grasp onto it to kind of pique interest?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so the last time we talked a bit about the history of the Enneagram, in very broad terms, where it came from, that it's ancient wisdom that has been offered by different people and thinkers, offering basically puzzle pieces over the millennia, right? It's really ancient wisdom about what motivates people to do the things that they do, which, quick recap, only you can know, that we see manifestations of behavior in people, but only you as an individual can know what your inner motivation for it is. But the Enneagram has an uncanny way of unpacking some of those inner motivations to help explain some of the behaviors that ultimately we end up struggling with because we're kind of fixated on our ways of doing life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so to extend a bit further into that, it's perhaps helpful to talk about what the Enneagram isn't from that perspective. Like, most personality tests are, I think, an opportunity to pick the one you want, you know, pick the personality type that appeals to you, which is really such an ego-driven thing, right? The Enneagram says, no. The number that you identify with is actually your obsession and your fixation, right? Mm-hmm. And so from that perspective, it's not a tool to congratulate yourself. It's a tool to understand those patterns that hurt us. But it's not about beating yourself up either, right? It's a safe place to explore, you know, who's the real you underneath all of that ego-driven stuff. And it's a way to recognize the influences that your past have had on you, but not to get resentful about it or feel shame about it. Mm. You have to acknowledge what's there. It's like a recipe, right? You know, you can't make your dinner tonight. Well, some of us can make a dinner with no recipes, but I can't, right? You have to understand what ingredients you need to make your dinner really good tonight. And sometimes, a lot of the time, I have found that it's really important to understand, to be honest about the recipe that makes up me, Amanda, right? What makes me tick and what causes me some bother sometimes, and learn how I might want to look and change at that.
It's so funny, because sometimes people feel like what gives them power is focusing on the good parts of themselves and powering them up even harder. But actually, to give yourself the power is knowing where your blind spots is. That gives you massive power.
Yes. Okay. So, Emma, great point. One of the things that the Enneagram, one of the basic foundational principles of Enneagram, again, Ennea meaning nine, gramma meaning to drop. And If you, for those who are listening to this podcast, you can Google the Enneagram symbol and you'll get it up right away. But it's a circle with 9 points within it. And guess what? Nine divides by three, right? Answer is three. And so the Enneagram divides into what they call three triads, tri meaning three, or intelligence centers. And some people have, Enneagram teachers have talked about these intelligence centers, like being the difference between the infrastructure of your computer versus the operating center versus the applications that go on top of all that, right? Where the infrastructure is our, what they call the instinctual, intelligence center. That's that stirring that lives in your gut, where you just kind of know what you know, what you know, and you can't put your finger on it. And you might live life predominantly from that place. And then there's the feeling center, which is like the operating system that goes on the infrastructure. And that feeling center is like a navigation tool which helps organize the those instinctual responses, puts a name to them, like I'm feeling happy, or I'm sad, or I'm scared, or I'm disappointed, or I'm anxious, or any number of those things, right? That's the feeling intelligence center. And some of us, hey, me, operate from that space. And then there's the thinking intelligence center. And like that's like all of the applications on top of the baseline operating system of your computer, right? So like our internal computer. And that's where we gather information and research and observe and think and consider and study the inputs that come into our world, and then the outputs that we might put back out into the world as a result. And that's called the thinking intelligence center. So I have a question for you, Emma. Which direction, in which triad do you think, which intelligence center do you think that you primarily reside in? Meaning, when something happens in your world, do you think you're more likely to do something about it, feel something about it, or think something about it?
Feel all the way.
No doubt about that. Tell me something about that.
I just my gut goes, I start thinking things, in terms of like, well, how do I feel about that? Like, I'm instantly, I'm not like thinking it all through logically. I'm like, oh, I don't like that, or yes, I love that, or it's all like, it's all, how do I feel about that? Not,
So
I
your
need to
first,
assess the merits of this.
yeah, okay. So your first filter then is feeling. And I like what you said about that, Emma, because you said that, it's not that you don't think or you don't do, right? And in fact, we all do all three of these things. We feel and we think and we do in very quick combination, right? And so for that reason, it's often hard for folks to figure out what their first filter is. But there always is one. And as we learn more about the Enneagram, going to understand some more about that. But yeah, your first filter is feeling, as is mine. And I know plenty of people, some of my best friends, their first filter is doing. I have a few friends whose first filter is actually thinking. And it's funny because when I'm thinking about the people I warm to eat most easily, it's people who do the same thing first as I do.
Exactly, because I think sometimes I can be a bit like, oh yeah, that's brilliant, woo, you know, like this party time, that's a great idea. Whereas somebody else, you might, you know, sometimes you might meet somebody and you tell them something and they take a big deep breath and they go, well, and you're like, did I do something wrong? And they're literally just thinking, but it makes you nervous because it's not how you function. Like,
Yeah.
yeah.
But can you imagine how us feelers make that person think?
Just
Or, you know,
overload.
right, when we effusively emote over what we're feeling about this or that, or, you know, I mean, it must be like, oh my God, like boundaries, you know, like I don't need to know why are you wearing your heart on your sleeve?
You like an excited dog in my office?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, interesting. So another perspective here, Emma. Is there something that you know that you do that you wish you could stop yourself doing?
Well, I feel things first and I can overfeel things, so I can fall in the pit about things that are too sad, or yeah, ruminating is a bad thing for me because I'm overfeeling, I'm putting too much attention on it, like an unhealthy amount.
Yeah, you'll lose sleep ruminating in the middle of the night.
Oh yeah, all of
Oh,
that.
yeah, you see.
And you know, I'm better now, but I used to react to things based on my feelings before I took a breath and went, okay, I need to think this through first so I don't end up splattering my emotions everywhere over everyone about this situation or whatever it is.
Sounds like you have some regret over that. Without having to go into the details, there's that
Yeah.
is regret inducing for you.
It's realizing that even though I have my emotion, well, it's this classic "you are not your emotions" thing. That yes, I feel my emotions, but I do have to assess them first because I know I can overdo it.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, thanks for sharing that.
And how about you?
Yeah. I wish I have got better at this. I'm going to give myself some credit. I call myself redeemable too. Anyway, I wish that I could stop saying yes. Like I wish my default was not yes when asked to do something. Because that ability to be a people pleaser is one of my worst traits, and it's totally aligned with my Enneagram number. Yeah, so I wish I could stop myself saying yes when I really mean no, when I really want to say no instead. But then I say yes because for some reason the risk of saying no is too great for me. The risk of relational disconnect as a result of saying no is so great that I say yes instead, even though I don't mean it. And I wish I did not. I have to catch myself. And I think I probably always will. It will never be organic to me to say no first. But I have to stop the yes and think. So, yeah.
So you're not then doing the do with a smile on your face, meantime going, forget, you know, about it. You're really annoyed about it. And
Right.
yeah.
Right. And it might be annoyed with you, and it might be annoyed with me, but it's annoyance and it's resentment. Not cool. So, another question, Emma. What is a behavior of yours that makes you happy with you? Me happy with me. So, this is not what other people might tell you makes them happy with you. No. We're not interested in that. When you go to bed at night and you feel like you've handled your day really well, how is it that you showed up that day? Like, What is it that you are happy with you about?
It's usually because the day was organized and measured, with minimal scattiness and without too much emotional roller coastering. It's just a
Which
nice.
induces the scattiness, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So it's just, I've enjoyed my day and what I did, and it all ran to the right routine. And my emotions were like, just enjoying the day, not too happy and not too sad. Just in
Right.
the
So you are
middle.
emotionally very regulated then.
Yeah,
Yes.
well, sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I'm happy when I have been happy by myself. So I actually find it quite hard to be alone. I need to be alone. I need that time. And I really enjoy it for a certain amount of time. And then I really don't, and I'm looking for, hey, where are the people? But some of my best days are those where I have been alone and just with me, and my own thoughts and my own done what I want to do. And I guess I've learned more about myself through that process rather than always being off around other people and kind of, I guess, ignoring myself, right? So I've not ignored myself today. That makes me happy, is when I've been able to do that.
So, can you give like a quick summary then? So, for the people that are listening, what are the key questions after listening to this to ask themselves to get this wandering going?
Yes. Okay. So, in that instinctual, in that doing intelligence space, okay. So, when you look at the Enneagram symbol, the three numbers that run across the top, whereas where 9 is at the equivalent of 12 o'clock, and 8 is to the left and 1 is to the right. 8, 9, and 1 are the doing intelligence center numbers. Okay. And in a new situation, their instinctual reaction is to do something. They may act without thinking. And in the case of the 9, they may actually do nothing at all. The primary motivation for behavior, and unfortunately, this sound is a negative, it's perceived as a negative motivation because we tend to say that anger and fear and shame are bad emotions. I just want to say there's no such thing as bad emotions. They're neither good or bad. They're a navigating tool. But the underlying primary emotion, then, and motivation in that doing triad is anger, right? That's what's simmering under the surface there. The 8, the challenger, externalizes their anger. So they are motivated to do, and it will be in an outward direction. So it will usually be directed at others. Now, whether that's justified or not is not what we're talking about here. It's just that in that moment, their anger is going to be poured out first on other people. Okay. That's your 8. The 9 in this intelligence center, well, no, let's go to 9 last. The 1 is, they're called the perfectionist. I mean, there's various different monikers for these, but the perfectionist tends to internalize their anger, meaning that in a situation that is challenging, they will tend to beat themselves up first. They have an inner critic that sits on their shoulder and says, well, why did you do this? And why did you do that? And that wasn't very smart. And what are you thinking? Okay. They tend to beat themselves up. Now, the 9 in this instinctual center tends to stuff down their anger. They don't know what to do with it. So they neither externalize it or internalize it particularly well. They pretend it doesn't exist. And nines on the Enneagram are known as the peacekeepers, which is different from peacemaking, by the way. Sometimes you have to draw the sword to make peace, right? Nines are classic peacekeepers. They will do or say or think whatever is necessary to not have to look at their own anger. Okay. So that's the instinctual doing intelligence center. Okay. Then coming around the Enneagram, you have on the right side of it, as you look at the diagram, you have twos, threes, and fours. And they are, that's the heart triad, the feeling intelligence center. And so when they are inserted into a new situation, their instinctual reaction is to feel something, like we just talked about. We both sit there, Emma, but we do different things with our feelings. Okay. So twos, known as the helpers, that's where I sit, that's my point. Externalize that feeling onto others. So we look at a situation, and the first question we ask ourselves is, well, what must that other person need in this situation? What might they be feeling? We don't stop to think about what we're feeling in that situation. Well, we might later if we're aware enough to go look at that, right? But our first concern is others. Okay. The four, on the other hand, Emma, often known as the romantics, they internalize their feelings, right? So exactly what you said about ruminating, about what you're feeling about something, and having difficulty getting out of that cycle in order to figure out what to actually do with those feelings, what they're telling you, what you need to think as a result of those. Okay, so that's the four. And then the three in the middle is known as the performer, and they are the stuffer of their feelings, right? So they don't know what to do. They know that they feel, but as soon as they feel, because of, and we'll go into more detail about this in future podcasts, because they have a pattern in their earlier years where they have not been able to process through that emotional part of themselves. They've just learned to pretend that it doesn't exist. And then they will take on the feelings of whoever are around them and like merge with that,
The
right?
chameleon.
Yes, it is very chameleon-like, and we will go into that, later on. But yeah, they're stuffers of their feelings, would prefer not to feel anything at all. Okay. Then moving on, coming around to the left side of the symbol, we have fives and sixes and sevens, and they are the thinking triad or intelligence center. And in any new situation for them, their first instinct is to think and plan what might happen next or what they need to understand in order to decide what does or does not happen next. They may overthink things, and their underlying primary emotion is actually fear. So in getting there, I realized I did not say that in the feeling triad there, the underlying emotion is shame, right? In the thinking triad, the underlying emotion is fear. And so the investigator, the five, is known as the investigator. They internalize their fear. In order to get a grasp on their world, they gather as much knowledge as they can about it and keep it in here. It doesn't mean that they don't ever share it, no, but their primary motivation is to understand better. And they may spend so much time understanding their world better that actually they miss the opportunity to do whatever it needs that it is that they need to do, or to let their emotions help navigate for them too. Actually, fives are, they are in fact deep feelers, but they can sometimes get so trapped in that inner need to understand information that they forget to extract the wisdom from it.
I've worked with some people like that. It's an interesting one.
Yes, it really is. Yes. Now six is known as the loyalist. They externalize their fear. So they are the ones that are more likely to be afraid of the outside world as it presents themselves. So they're gathering information about it, sure, just like the five does, but they're primarily concerned with how they are going to navigate everything that's out there that they might have to deal with. Like, go to the movie theater. Where are all the exits just in case the fire alarm goes off? You know, I'm in a work situation. What's people's countenance around here? What might I have to do with that or understand about that to be able to navigate that? So they externalize much more. What might happen if there's a huge windstorm and that tree falls on my house, right? They're looking to ensure that they feel safe and secure in the world in which they operate. And then finally, the seven, known as the enthusiast, they are the ones that stuff down their thinking, but it's not so much stuffing down as it is running away. So they're gathering the information about their inner and outer worlds, but they don't really want to handle that, right? They don't want to deal with it. And so they're known as the enthusiast or the, you know, I call them eternal optimists, because they're always looking forward to what the next thing is rather than dealing with the present, and definitely don't want to deal with the past. All right. So interesting.
I've spent many, 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 many years dating sevens.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm highly experienced in sevens.
I wonder what that kind of that draw was for you to sevens. Maybe we'll understand more about that later too. Yes. I've spent a lot of life being drawn to threes. And so, yeah. So, you know, that gives you a bit of a background on where, you know, the numbers land in their triad. But hopefully, for anyone who's new to the Enneagram, it gives you a way to just start thinking about this stuff, right? What's my first filter? Knowing that we use all three, you know, gut instinct, feeling instincts, and thinking instincts in quick succession with one another, in any order, right? But we do employ all three, but one is our first filter. And some people will know what their second filter is, and others won't, and that's fine. But it's just a way to kind of get that first guidepost about where you land. And even if you discover over time that what you thought was your first filter is not actually your first filter, it's often the case that there's a really good reason why you thought that a particular filter was your first one. And it turns out that it's not. So, yeah. So, for example, just a quick example of that is that my second filter is doing, right? When I'm in a stressed space, I do first.
So if you're
And then I.
vigorously cleaning your pots in the kitchen, then we know there's a problem.
Probably, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So,
So could you
anyway.
just give us the questions that people need to ask themselves to start thinking about this? What are the things that people need to start thinking
Yes.
about?
Right. Okay. So if you do not already have an idea of where you land, and some people will have done some Enneagram work, right? So this is really a question for folks who are really new to this. Do you tend towards doing, thinking, or feeling first? So an event happens, something happens. You might get a phone call, or something happens on the street outside, something happens at work. Is your first instinct to do something about that event, whether it's a good idea or not, is not up for debate, right? But is your first instinct to do something about it, to feel or emote something about it, or to think, evaluate something about it? And if your first instinct is to do none of the above, that is also something that's helpful to know. Okay. So that's the first question. The second one is, the thing I know I do that I wish I could stop myself doing is dot 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 fill in the blank. And then finally, a behavior of mine that makes me happy with me, caveat, not what other people tell you makes them happy, but what makes you happy with you is fill in the blank.
There we go. So there will be more podcasts about the Enneagram because there's a lot of information there and we both love it.
Yes, we do. It's such an incredible, it's secret sauce.
Oh man, it is secret sauce.
It is secret sauce that has helped me navigate my professional life, and my personal life in equal measure.
Definitely. It's amazing. Okay. Well, thank you for the essentials, and I hope everybody has a little think about those questions, and there will be more podcasts on this where we can lay out a bit more for people and see if they can find themselves.
Yep, absolutely. All right, nice to see you, Emma.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening today. We really appreciate you. If you liked what you heard today, then please follow or subscribe to the podcast so that you won't miss any episodes. You can do this by going to the show page on your chosen podcast player and click the plus or follow buttons. If you like the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and share with a friend. Don't forget to visit the website, thewellsbyshift.com, to find out more about our business and life coaching that we offer. And why not come to check out our blog posts, videos, and more? See you next time!